This episode is brought to you by Mountain Sea Media. I spent half my life near the Pacific Ocean and the other half in the mountains of Central Oregon. These places are full of profound stories and experiences that guide my life, even now as a media creator and a beer professional. This is how Mountain Sea Media was born. I realized how impactful stories are to our lives and business. Stories share good experiences and the warmth of friends. They improve business by sharing these experiences and connecting deeply with our customers. If you'd like to connect better with your customers through copywriting and storytelling, contact me at jeremy@mountainseamedia.com. It's your story. I'll help you tell it.
Welcome to episode 42 of Good Beer Matters.
We have such a great beer culture and such a great food culture, but it's seldom you see the two come together. What happened with craft beer 10, 15 years ago is now happening with American cheese. I would take beer over wine if I had to go to battle any day, because it's just, you've got more depth of tricks to pull from, for sure.
It may surprise you to hear that cheese and beer are surprisingly similar. Both are made with farm ingredients, both are fermented to some extent, and both have become very complex and interesting. There are even a number of brewers who started using dairy equipment way back in the day. So why is it that when people think of cheese pairings, most of us default to wine? In this episode, we're going to break down how cheese is made, discuss variations, and get into what makes a great pairing. I also want to introduce you to the American Cheese Society that works to promote and support craft cheesemakers, much like the Brewers Association does for craft beer. We also discuss that, though wine may be good, beer and even cider usually come out ahead when paired with cheese. My name is Jeremy. I'm a certified Cicerone, BJCP judge, IBD certified brewer, and a beer writer. I believe the art, the science, and the culture of beer has more of a profound effect on us than we realize. I believe there's a world of wisdom found in every glass, and I intend to get to the bottom of it. This is Good Beer Matters. These are the stories of us, of great food and the beer that brings it all together. I hope you enjoy episode 42 of Good Beer Matters with author, cheese and pairing expert, Steve Jones. About cheese and beer, especially together, for quite some time now. I have dabbled quite a bit with hosting some beer and cheese tasting events, and have really started to begin learning more about cheese. But I am definitely a neophyte, and I want to learn from you. When I reached out to the American Cheese Society, all fingers ended up pointing in your direction. So it's funny, we're 3 hours away. So I can't wait to talk to you more.
Nice.
Will you please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your history with beer and cheese? And I know there's so much more to it. You've got free rein to tell us anything and everything.
Yeah, I'm Steve Jones. I own Cheese Bar here in Portland, Oregon. And earlier this year, my first book came out. It is called Cheese, Beer, Wine, Cider, 75 Perfect Pairings. It's kind of a field guide to pairing cheese with different beverages.
You started in wine. You were tasked with... I bought your book. I downloaded it on Kindle, and I didn't have enough time to read it cover to cover, but of course, all the pairings, they are perfect as a reference to go back to, which I'm sure I will. But I did read a little bit about you, and I did kind of read through you kind of go into a deeper understanding of beer and cheese, and I thought that was just wonderful. But what I gleaned from that book is, you started in wine, they had you work on the cheese bar, and dutifully, you said yes, or serendipitously, but you have spent a tremendous amount of time learning about cheese, tasting cheese, learning about wine, tasting wine, learning about beer, tasting beer, learning about cider, tasting cider, and you, if not
before then, definitely for putting this book together, you put yourself through the ringer of comparing and contrasting and trying to find different combinations that would work.
Yeah, we worked on this book for over 4 years. We paired once a week, every week. And for the 75 pairings, there's alternative pairings for each one, too. So there's basically about 350 pairings. But to get each pairing that ended up in the book was, you know, a multiple-week process, generally. So, it was pretty arduous. It was pretty fun most of the time. Some of them were much harder than others, and some of them happened, you know, almost immediately. We're like, oh, I think this will work well, and it did. Other ones we thought would work well, and we had to just struggle and struggle and struggle. In fact, one cheese in particular, we went back to probably 20 times before we got a pairing for it that we felt was really good.
Well, it's funny because I'm going to say this, and then I'm going to immediately back away from this ledge. I feel a little bit of kinship from the standpoint of I challenged myself to essentially now write a couple articles for craftbeer.com on pairing cheese and beer, and then the second one was pairing beer, cheese, and charcuterie, and for the in both of those articles took tremendous amount of research and time, and I remember just getting a bunch of friends together, and I grabbed I think 20 different beers, kind of like highlighting the major styles, and I think I grabbed a dozen different cheeses to kind of give a broad scope of what was out there, and then we all just kind of took our time just kind of trying to find the pairings that worked. And it was a lot of fun, but it was a lot of work. And that was just for one little article. I can't imagine what you had to go through.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, luckily my co-author is very diligent and patient, and you know, we both kind of pushed each other to keep going. So I think it could have died by the wayside, you know, a year into this project. But we pushed through, and you know, now we're super proud of what we ended up with.
Yeah, that seems like one of those things. I'm sure you've gotten the comment of like, oh, you had to taste beer and cheese. Oh, how rough it must have been.
Yeah.
But I feel like I have a glimpse into how much work and effort and that must have put in, and how easily that whole project could have been derailed. Because at some point you're thinking, man, I just want some water and some Doritos.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, there was a lot of lentil soup afterwards, you know.
Absolutely. It kind of reminds me of that classic old story of the chef who makes just amazing food, you know, all night, every night, and comes home, and they're hungry, and they just make a quesadilla.
Yeah.
They're done cooking. I don't want anything fancy. I just need something that I don't have to think about.
Yep.
So that is the burden upon your shoulders, I assume.
For sure. But, you know, One worth taking for sure.
Absolutely. Well, please forgive me. I have not yet heard of your cheese bar in Portland, and you know I don't live near enough to Portland, but close enough where I kind of feel like I should have known about it. Tell us more about that shop and what you do there.
So Cheese Bar will turn 10 years old in March. I basically took my original cheese shop, which is called Steve's Cheese, and we just dropped it down in the middle of a bar. So it's a full service cheese shop, about 200 to 250 cheeses at any given time. And it's surrounded by a very nice little pub, about 30 seats. We have 6 tap handles, 5 dedicated to beer, 1 dedicated to cider, a bottle list of about 50 different beers, about 50 different wines, and about 20 different ciders. And then a real kind of a beverage-friendly menu, things that go well with those different beverages. And just kind of combined all my passions and of good food, good beer, good cheese, all under one roof. I think in Oregon, you probably would agree with this, we have such a great beer culture and such a great food culture, but it's seldom you see the two come together. And I feel like beer is a serious beverage that deserves serious food, and it seldom is given that, you know, that opportunity. You know, it's quite often just served with fries and nachos and so on and so forth. And mm-hmm. So we wanted to give beer the opportunity to really show what it can do with good quality food.
Well, and I think that's extraordinary. And I feel like this conversation is going to be, would be the great culminating conversation at the end of this podcast, but we'll, you know, we're here. Let's talk about it. You know, I have seen plenty of places of delis and, you know, bottle shops where they put all the ingredients there, but they don't have anyone to help you learn how to put that puzzle together. And there are very few places, I can't think of one off the top of my head right now, where they have all the pieces and ingredients put together and a guide who will actually help you through the process. Too many times you have just great cheese that you can't pronounce, and so therefore, I don't want to take the risk. We need a guide to help them through that process and help them understand this is easier than you think, and it's far better than what you expect.
Yep. Yeah, that's our primary job, you know, when we're behind the counters, too, is to demystify the product, make it fun, make it approachable. You know, it's cheese is peasant food, as is beer at the end of the day, you know, so it should be consumed by everyone and not be held up on this pedestal that makes it unapproachable, because it's an everyday food that should be consumed and enjoyed.
Absolutely. I mean, cheese is made from milk that comes from an animal on a farm generally. So it can't get more peasant than down to earth than that.
Yeah.
Well, talk to me. Tell me what the ACS is. That's another major component I want to make sure we discuss.
Sure. The American Cheese Society. It's a group of cheesemakers, cheesemongers, cheese enthusiasts. It's our primary professional organization. And we have a yearly competition / judging that this coming summer is going to be in Portland, Oregon. So it's a great opportunity if anyone's in this neck of the woods. It'll be, I think it's July 22nd through the 25th. And it's a gigantic conference of a bunch of cheese dorks coming together and really enjoying each other's company and having sessions about pairing cheese and beverages and cultures and, you know, food safety laws and all kinds of things. But it culminates with a festival of cheese that anyone could get a ticket to, where the 2,000 plus cheeses that we will judge are all out at the same time. So that's a pretty amazing opportunity for people to really see what's going on in the American Cheese Society, which is simply amazing. I mean, the growth curve on this thing, it's just like craft beer. We're about probably 10 years behind the craft beer curve, but you can, that trajectory is identical to what happened with craft beer 10, 15 years ago is now happening with American cheese.
Interesting. So, there are a couple of different ways we can go with that, but as far as this conference goes, that's something that's open to the public?
It is. It is there's a fee, definitely. You can buy a daily pass. You can buy passes to specific parts of it, or you can buy a pass to the entire 3-day experience. But it is separatable. You know, you can take it into different chunks if you'd like to just do one component of it. And I think if you go online, the schedule is probably out there, at least in a rudimentary form now, and over the next couple of months, it'll start to be populated more with the sessions and stuff.
Well, and I guess the most important question about this I have is, will they serve beer there?
They will definitely serve beer there. Okay. Cheesemakers don't get off the farm very often, and when they do, they like to drink a lot of beer.
They like to whoop it up, don't they?
Yeah. It's a pretty fun event. And yeah, the beer and cheese is really probably our fastest growing component within American Cheese Society for the beverage pairing. Like every year's conference now always has at least one beer and cheese pairing component. Where like 10 years ago, that was not even an inkling. And now it's basically, if you had a conference and you didn't have that component, people would be like, well, where's the beer and cheese part? So.
Wow. I may need to try to go to that just to increase my knowledge on cheese so that I can just do a better job with some of the events that I host. But So that is the American Cheese Society, but I have listeners from around the world. Are there other cheese entities? I'm sure there are in Europe, but what about in the Southern Hemisphere and South America, Australia, Africa? Are there other entities like that around the world?
There are, for sure. In fact, the American Cheese Society is the Americas, so it is all the way from Canada down to Chile. So it's all of the Americas. And so we do have members throughout South America and Central America and Canada also. On other continents, yeah, there's big festivals and organizations in Australia, New Zealand. There's a biannual event that happens in Italy called Simply Cheese. That's every second year. It just happened last month. So in 2 years, it will happen again. That's probably the biggest cheese party on the planet. And even places like the Far East now are coming. You know, the cheese revolution has just spread to all corners of the globe at this point. And yeah, there's professional organizations and judgings and competitions all over the world constantly now.
Mm. That's fantastic. And I'm sorry, I grew up at a time when Velveeta was the hot thing to bring home. And so it's really nice to see that things are just getting better and more interesting.
Absolutely.
We're going to talk a lot about cheese, but I feel like this is a base we definitely need to stick our foot on. Can you give me the basics of how cheese is made?
Sure. In the most rudimentary sense, you basically take liquid milk, you put it in a vat, and actually cheese making equipment and beer making equipment are almost interchangeable. In fact, I've seen breweries that have become creameries and creameries that have become breweries because the guts are pretty darn similar.
Hmm.
So you put the liquid dairy in the vat, you put some sort of coagulant in that liquid, the milk. The coagulant is going to break the milk and make it become curds and whey. The curds are the solid, the whey is the liquid.
What kind of coagulants what are we talking about when you say coagulants?
The traditional one would be rennet, and rennet is derived from the lining of a calf's stomach.
Okay.
So what makes, you know, food break down in a calf's stomach, the same thing as making that milk break into those two components.
So
a coagulant can also be vegetable-based, so it can be from thistle flowers. You can make a thistle rennet, and that's very common in, like, Portugal and Spain. You can make cheese break with an acid, like vinegar or lemon. It's just kind of like, what are you shooting for? The fun thing about cheese is, I call it cheese your own adventure, where you're starting off with this very basic couple of ingredients, and then your family treeing this thing out by, you know, I'm going to do this coagulant, and then I'm going to drain it, and then I'm going to press it, then I'm going to cook it, or I'm going to do this coagulant, and I'm going to wash the curds, and then I'm going to wash the rind, you know. So it's just like beer making, where you've got these very basic ingredients, and then you're just like, okay, which way am I going to tweak these ingredients to its final end?
Well, and forgive me for derailing your description of cheese making. But when you add this coagulant of rennet, would that be a similar concept of using finings in a beer to help coagulate all the yeast and help them flock out like ice and glass? Somewhat.
But the main thing with the coagulant with cheese making is you're wanting those milk solids. You're wanting the curds is your primary thing that you want for your cheese making.
Okay.
Most of the whey is going to be drained off, and the whey becomes a byproduct that a good cheesemaker is going to incorporate into some other use, maybe as simply as going on to fields as fertilizer or feed for other animals. But in this day and age, there's so many different ways to process whey that you've got people doing, you know, whey proteins that people are using in protein shakes and stuff like that.
Sure, okay.
But the primary thing as a cheese maker, you're wanting that milk solid, that curd, to be your base ingredient for your cheese.
Okay.
And then to that curd, you're going to add other cultures and salt and tweak, tweak, tweak. You know, you're either going to cut and press the curd, or you're going to cook the curd, or you're going to wash the curd. So that's your first real diversion, is what you do with that curd. And in general, like, let's just say most basic cheese, that curd could just be hung in a bag. And, you know, 4 hours later, you've got a very basic spreadable cheese, like Chèvre or Fromage Blanc.
Okay.
But if you want to do different things, you can cut the curd from as large as your thumb to as small as a grain of rice. The larger one's going to have more bounce to it. The smaller one's going to be denser. So that cheese is going to pack denser into the form. And so cheeses like Comté or Gruyère are cut to that rice size. Same with Parmesan. If anything that fits very dense, generally that curd's been cut very small and compressed and compacted.
Okay.
But with the cheese with more spring, it's going to be more a larger curd that is, you know, where you're wanting that spring still instead of that density.
Interesting.
And then you're going into like rind development. You're either washing the rind and, you know, developing bee linen on the rind that's giving it a stinky, footy aroma and making it ripen from the outside in, or you're developing a natural rind with a mold strain called Mucca that's, you know, protecting the outer edge of the cheese and letting the inside of the cheese continue on. So it's just so fun. I mean, that's where I think it's just amazing, all these different little tweaks you can do.
Well, and I usually liken that experience, you know, of course, you know, with a beer podcast, I think about that with beers. Like, we've got barley, we've got some hops, we've got some water, we've got some yeast. And so if you think about it, it's like beers should be a lot more similar than they are, but there's just such a vast variety. And the analogy I often use is you give a good musician 4 chords to play with and they'll come up with 1,000 songs.
Yep.
And it's just the combination is, and even if the combination is similar, how it's produced and presented is going to be vastly different as well. So it's just, you know, it's just a wonder of creativity and talent.
I agree 100%.
Go ahead. Finish your thought.
Oh, I was just going to say that's why I love both beer and cheese so much. There's just so many combinations between the two of them that it's, you'll never, ever run out. You know, I think I could taste for the rest of my life and I would never run out of potential combinations.
Well, and the thing that I love is, you know, you don't have to get fancy with the process and the ingredients, because just by keeping it simple, it will become complex at some point. And so it to me, that's what keeps it interesting. So let's grab a cheese or pick a cheese, and like a common cheese that everyone knows, but it is kind of a little bit more complex process, like a good blue cheese. And I know there's even different types of blue cheese, but you know, mm-hmm. what makes that blue cheese a blue cheese?
So with blue cheese, when we're back at that liquid dairy in the vat, you're adding a mold strain, generally it's Penicillium roqueforti, into that liquid dairy. So that mold is all the way through all that milk, when it's still milk and even before it's become curds and whey. And then you do the cheese making process. You put the cheese in the form. Generally, a few days later, once the cheese is in the form and it's a wheel, it'll be pierced with needles. And what those needles are doing are giving little avenues of oxygen into the inside of the cheese. And that's where those blue veins are coming from.
Mm.
Because that mold needs that oxygen to bloom. And so once it blooms in there, every little crevice, you know, where that between curds and stuff, that's where you're going to see those blue veins continue away from that needle poking. And so with blues, you can have, you know, something very, very mild and approachable that you can barely detect the bluing, or you can have something that's like I say tongue-shockingly blue, like Cabrales is a tongue-shockingly blue, where it almost feels like your tongue's being electrocuted with the sharpness of the blue.
Oh, wow.
So there's a gigantic scope within that blue family. For me, I would generally lean towards the milder end of those blues if I'm going to pair them with beer. Because that tongue shocking, you're really going to have a beer with a lot of character to hang with that. So if you stay on more like the Stilton end of the blue family, that's where I think you'll have better luck pairing blues with beer.
Yeah, I remember one beer and cheese event, we actually pulled, I think it was a Cave Aged Stilton, if I remember, and I don't remember all that well, but it was just a very pasty Stilton with just a really pungent aroma, and the texture was just, it was like almost oozing, and but the flavor was just out of this world. But it was such a big impact of a cheese flavor that we stuck it with a double IPA, and it was spectacular. But anything else just couldn't stand toe to toe with it.
Yeah, a lot of times with blues, I'll end up with like a imperial, you know, bourbon barrel imperial aged stouts. We'll quite often play with those bigger blues nicely. Barley wines have the guts to stand with them usually really nicely. But yeah, you generally, you've got to go with those much bigger flavors to hang with that blue for sure.
Yeah. So I guess that begs the question, you know, people have been, I'm going to use the term brainwashed, but if I were even more polite, I'd say trained. But I'm going to stick with brainwashed. That wine and cheese is where one ought to go in higher society. But you and I both know that wine and cheese is wonderful, and I do not want to take anything away from wine and cheese pairings. But what people are often surprised or even shocked by is beer goes with cheese as well as wine, and sometimes I think even better.
I would agree 100%, and that's a big part of why we decided to write the book. With wine, although you've got a lot of great qualities with wine, wine in general, mainly red wine, tannins just slowly deaden your palate. You know, where with beer, almost all beer has effervescence, and that effervescence will keep your palate lively. You can continue to taste because your palate's kind of being scrubbed clean by the bubbles. Where wine will really deaden your palate quickly. And beer also, when you imagine the scope of just the gradation of style and weight, you know, wine has a great range of styles and weights, but beer has a far greater, it's just, you know, more tricks in your bag when you're working with beer.
Yeah, absolutely.
You've got effervescence, you've got sweetness, you've got fruit, you've got spicy hops, you've got the beautiful esters and yeast, you know, you got all these different things that, I mean, I would take beer over wine if I had to go to battle any day, because it's just, you've got more depths of tricks to pull from, for sure.
Well, it's good to know that you're on our side, Steve.
Yeah, but I love wine and cheese.
Yeah.
And when we wrote this book, we tried really hard to make it be a very even playing ground. We picked 25 beers, 25 wines, 25 ciders. We tried to pick broadly throughout the families on all three. And then we tried to present everything on a very equal playing field. So, you know, the wine's not in a wine glass and the beer's in a, you know, party cup, you know, because I've done events where people will put out a nice glass for the wine. And then they'll really and truly have one of those, you know, red keg cups for the beer. And I'm like, well, that's not a fair fight.
No,
you know?
No, not at all.
You know, your aromas are going to be different. Your visual impact's going to be different. You know, everything about that experience. So we try to make this playing field as even as possible, and then just let people, you know, make the call for themselves.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think from my standpoint now, I clearly have stuck my flag in the sand as far as beer goes. But I'm one of those people where I definitely want to reach across the aisle. I prefer beer over wine, but I still love wine. And same thing goes with cider, sake, and whiskey, and all those things. I think whenever I've put an event together, especially I had the opportunity several times to do a wine, cheese, and beer combination event where we talked about each one. The goal of that was not to try and bring more people from the wine side to the beer side. My goal for that was to help people identify things as flavors and stop drawing conclusions of I'm a wine person or I'm a beer person. That doesn't matter. I tried to help them understand that. Think about these in terms of flavors. Wine, it has a wonderful flavor profile. So does beer. If you start thinking of things in terms of flavor, then you'll be able, freed up to think about, okay, what flavors do I want to put together that will give me the end result that I'm looking for?
Exactly. Yep. And that's how we think professionally day in, day out is just breaking everything down to base flavors. You know, with that being beer, wine, cider, cheese, that's, any professional, that's how they're going to approach it. Is they're going to break down those flavors into all the base flavors, and then consider it that way instead of as a whole as wine or as a whole as beer. It's like, well, let's look at all the components that make this a complete beverage.
Yeah. And just as a quick aside, I kind of want to put this in there in case there's someone listening that hasn't really considered this concept yet. When we're talking about flavors, of course, we're really primarily talking about aromas, because you have taste, you have aroma, and you have mouthfeel, and you put all those together, and that's what we consider flavor. But as far as tastes, we still have only like 5 or 6 tastes that we've identified as you can taste this, not that. But when we talk about, you know, the flavor of wine, the flavor of beer, the flavor of cheese, that is primarily aroma driven.
Yeah, and the cool thing about aroma is it's very evocative. It's the most evocative of any of your senses. So it will take you to a place in your past. I mean, quite often we're tasting different things. We're like, this is like being in my grandma's kitchen, you know.
Just, oh yeah,
you just get that memory. It's such a cool thing when a food will do that for you. And I love that part of, and that's all based in smell. I mean, mm-hmm. Smell is where your deepest memories lie.
And it's funny, I've shared this kind of more philosophical conversation with some people that, you know, flavor is just another form of communication. And of course, we think of communication primarily as, Steve, right now you and I are talking, we are sharing words that have a meaning, and so therefore we are communicating with our words. But art can communicate an emotion. A song can communicate an emotion and a memory and stuff like that. I think flavor has the same ability, and you just brought up the perfect point, is if you encounter a smell that immediately takes you back to grandma's kitchen, or whenever I get a wine or a beer that's musty, it immediately takes me back to two places. I grew up in Southern California, so that musty smell, I don't want to drink it, but I love smelling it because it takes me back to the Pirates of Caribbean ride in Disneyland. Or
I know exactly where you're coming from.
Right, because all that wood and all that water, you just get that musty smell. Or it takes me to my great-grandfather's house in his basement where there was just an open dirt floor basement. So there's just this moisture in the old wood because he built the house himself. And those are just happy memories. But I think flavors communicate in terms of memories, in terms of experiences, and maybe even images. But I think it's important that we kind of put that hypothesis out there that flavor is just another form of artful communication.
Yeah, I would agree for sure. And I think that's why people like sitting down at a table together. It's yet another way to commune. You know, it's very, very basic human, communication, and it's a common need. You know.
Oh gosh, I hope there's a time when you and I can host an event together, because I already feel like we're on the edge of just going into outer space with this stuff, because it's just so good. All I need is a beer in my hand and some good cheese on my plate, and we're, you know, time for takeoff. Actually, I'm going to use that as a perfect little segue. So let's talk about when, you know, I've hosted some events. You've definitely hosted some plenty of events. When you put together an event, you know, obviously your goal is not to just feed people, because, you know, that could be anything. But I would assume that you're also trying to educate people. You're trying to provide for them an experience.
Absolutely.
What is it you're trying to teach or convey to your guests who come to your events?
I think I already touched on this briefly, but the main thing I see as my primary goal as a cheesemonger or a cheese educator is to demystify and make this product something that you're not afraid of. So it's making people be comfortable with things that they already know they enjoy. But just making it, like, I love sushi, but I'm a little uncertain as to, you know, do I like freshwater eel or saltwater eel better? You know, so my job as a cheesemonger or cheese educator is being like, here's a sheep's milk cheese, and kind of letting people know, oh, I do like sheep's milk cheese, and I've eaten sheep's milk cheese many times because I've eaten manchego and pecorino and so on and so forth. But just making them feel comfortable that this is okay. We all start at a baseline at some point, and then we build up from there. So I really enjoy teaching. Basic classes are my very favorite because it's taking people and bringing them into the fold and saying, okay, we're all good. We're all, you know, there's no bad question. This is, you know, there's a lot to learn. I've been in cheese for 22 years. I think I know 10% of what there is to know. You know?
Yeah. Which is a lot. 10% of all there is to know. That's a lot. You know, whenever I've had events, I feel the same way. I love, kind of breaking down some barriers, particularly those of, well, I'm a wine person, but I'll taste your beer. During those events, I've heard people, especially, you know, devout wine drinkers say, wow, I really like that beer better with this cheese.
Yeah.
I want to.
That's always a great moment.
that's a great moment, but my goal is not to bring them to my beer side. My goal was to, I want to break down those barriers that you have created in your mind. I want you to stop thinking in terms of this versus that. The thing I love is to get people to think about, you know, flavors like we just talked about. The other thing I really love to do is I try and bring some educational element into my events, where we talk about why things are, like, you know, for example, like an American light lager, like Coors, for example, you know, these are beers that are now kind of frowned upon because of the craft beer industry. And especially in America, when you use the term tradition to some people, that means, well, we're doing it just because we've always done it that way. Well, there was a point in time when people came to, or especially Germans came to America in the mid 1800s, and they had to make some decisions on how to brew their beer because everything was different. They had different ingredients. They had to make some decisions. They had to make some changes. And there's a reason why things are the way they are. I love sharing some of that knowledge so that people have a greater perspective. And even if it's something that they are not in love with, they gain a little bit of appreciation, a little bit of understanding. And I think with that understanding and with breaking down those barriers of this versus that, then in my opinion, the entire world has the ability to open up, and they have the opportunity for just such a sweeter, more impactful, more profound experience generally across the board.
Yep, I agree. It's just fun. That's what makes you want to keep going further, is that little bit of knowledge makes you hungry for a little bit more. And I think we all generally enjoy history, or I know most people in the food industry enjoy that historical aspect of it. And I think, yeah, it just gives you more meat to bite into, to keep wanting to go back.
Yeah. There's a little bit more context there, a little bit, you know, I can look at an abstract painting and go, huh, I don't get it. But with a little bit of backstory of behind what was happening, or just understanding this event in history, or watching a movie about this event in history is great and all. But, you know, understanding what was happening during that time just brings a better appreciation of what it is we're spending our time on. It makes it more worthwhile to me.
I agree.
So you decided, because you want to educate people, you know, like we just talked about, and help them understand these experiences, you actually, like we talked about in the very beginning of this podcast, you took the time to write this book, research this book, and you put diplomatically, you put wine, beer, cider, and obviously all paired with different cheeses. Why did you decide to do that? Who is that book for?
It's for all four audiences, really. It's for people who like wine, people who like beer, people who like cider, people who like cheese. And most of those people don't go, they've got their, like you said, wine and cheese, wine and cheese, wine and cheese. Then you've got the beer dorks who are just like, beer and cheese, you know. And I feel that there's merit in all three beverages. I feel like there's merit in almost any beverage with cheese, but mainly these three. I think they're all very, very worthy components to a cheese pairing. And So we just really wanted to kind of respectfully show that all there is no winner. There's just degrees of good, bad, and ugly, basically. And we kind of found that, like, wine wasn't always our favorite beverage, but the highs were higher. So, like, when we got a really good pairing with wine, it quite often was like, wow, you know, socks rolling off the feet. And beer was, you know, it paired more easily in general, but you got fewer of those highs. And the lows were quite often lower. Because beer, like mainly hops accentuate any flavor. So with a sheepy cheese, it becomes unbearably sheepy. Oh. Hops are like a megaphone. You know, if there's a bitter note, it's going to accentuate that bitter note to where it's just so out of balance you don't want it. So we kind of found, you know, although beer pairs better overall, the highs weren't as high and the lows were a bit lower. And the real common denominator of the three was cider. Cider paired out first almost every time. Cider just is the secret weapon that goes great with cheese. But it had very, very few of those, like, socks rolling off the feet moments. But if you just want to succeed consistently, cider's that, you know, B+ day in, day out.
Wow.
So it was kind of fun to go through and just see that if you were to graph it, they'd all end up at about the same final number. But it's just, how did you get to that final number? You know, with these super high highs and these super low lows, or these very consistent mid grades. So it was very eye opening after a couple of years of doing this, being like, okay, we're consistently seeing these things. Now, that being said, you'll still find the perfect pairing that you're like, wow, that is the best thing I've ever put in my mouth. You know, like my personal favorite I think I've ever had is I love supplication with a really, really perfectly ripe camembert. It's just one of those just absolutely stunning moments where you're like, that's perfect.
Oh, wow. You know, it's funny you say that because, you know, one of the things I gleaned just from reading your book and going through the references, I skimmed through those. I'll dive into those more deeply when I put another event together for sure. But I guess I had been so focused on beer for the last few years that I haven't really given cider much of thought. And so now I need to open up my point of view a little bit and see what I can do with some ciders, or at least be open to trying those. But, you know, when you say cider was a perfect go-to move, it's funny, when I think about those beers that that tended to be more of a, hey, this works with most everything. They had some similar qualities to a cider, like a really good tropical IPA that wasn't too bitter, but had a lot of tropical citrus notes, aroma notes from the hops, or even just a really good, slightly tart saison that wasn't too phenolic, that wasn't too funky, but just really a little bit more on the, like, the fruity side. Those were just, in fact, with camembert, I mean, a really good saison that isn't too funky too much. That is one of my favorite pairings. And so given that, I can see how a cider would come in and just kind of, you know, bulldoze some of those walls down.
Yeah, for certain. Yeah, it's a fun one to play with, and it's the one whenever you do a class with all three, the audience are like, you know, they're like, I didn't realize I liked cider, you know, or I didn't realize how good cider was with food. And I think cider, I seldom would sit and have a pint of cider, but give me food and cider, and I'm going to sit at that table for hours. Because it's such a good food beverage. It's got acidity, it's got generally lower ABV, you know, quite often effervescence. The fruit itself is, you know, a real easy foil. So you've got a lot of cool tricks in that cider bag for sure.
That's great. So, you know, you do a lot of beer education, I'm sorry, cheese education with beer, wine, cider, everything else. Do you essentially take your show on the road? Do you travel to do events, or do you just pretty much...
No, we do, because the American Cheese Society is in a different city every year, so we've done these events all over the country at ACS. I also, we did Do you know about Feast Portland, that food festival that we have like every September?
I'm aware of it, but I have not attended yet. That's on my to-do list.
It's sponsored by Bon Appetit. And it's this big, super dorky food festival. And a couple of years back, they said, hey, do you want to be a moderator for a cheese beer versus wine? And I said, yeah, I'd love to, but I don't want to just sit at tables and talk about the merits of beer and wine. I said, let's make this really fun. And we made it, we called it a Smackdown. And we dressed up like all-star wrestlers, and I was the referee.
That's great.
We used a cowbell, and we had round after round where we would come out, and I would present a cheese. And then, like, Christian DiBenedetti, who wrote The Great American Ale Trail.
Oh, yeah, I know Christian, yeah.
Yeah, he was our beer guy, and he's all in full Mexican wrestling costume. And, you know, he's throwing slang at the wine guy, which we had a couple different wine people from different major publications. And it was just a lot of fun. And so that we ended up touring around. We took that down to San Francisco for a couple of events and stuff. But yeah, we've taken it on the road quite a bit, actually.
Oh, my gosh. I would love to do something like that. In fact, you remember that movie from way back when, Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, I always thought it would be wonderful to do some Thunderdome matches where two drinks enter, one drink leaves type of thing.
And, yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Beer versus wine, go. and just as a fun competition, but just kind of like, you know, kind of turn it into one of those things. I think that would be a crowd pleaser type of event. And I got to get to Feast.
Yeah, it's fun. But yeah, that's more my style when I'm teaching. I like to make it fun and approachable and take, you know, we can all be serious and I can teach a serious class, but I think it's a lot more fun to, you know, laugh about it. And I tell people I learn a lot more from train wrecks than I do from great success. You know, something's horrible in my mouth, I'm not going to put that in there again.
Oh, right,
you know,
yeah.
So you learn. It's like, oh, hoppy beer and sheep's milk cheese, not good, you know?
Oh, but yeah.
You get that revolting sensation a couple times in your body's like, let's remember not to do that.
Oh, yeah. Whenever something goes bad, we often ask ourselves, what the hell just happened? So we start analyzing it, and we learn from it. When it's something just amazing, like, oh, that was great, I hope that happens again. Well, it's good to analyze both experiences, but we tend to analyze the bad ones more just so we can avoid them.
It's a survival instinct.
Totally.
Yeah, primal.
What do you wish more people knew when it comes to cheese and beer?
Just how good they could be. I mean, it's like I was saying, you know, beer has all these great pairing components. You know, I love the malty beers are probably my favorite beer to pair with cheese. That sweet malty note is just such an easy foil for like a nutty cheese.
Mm-hmm.
But also esters, you know, the esters and yeast are just like so fun, and you can get such cool little things just off the aromatics of the esters that work really nice with like a tangy fresh goat's milk cheese. You know, that it's just, there's so much cool depth with beer. And if people, you know, will step back and think of it as the entire gradation, the entire palette of beer, there's just so many fun options, you know, and I can basically find a beer for anybody who even says they hate beer. Yeah, I can get a beer and cheese pairing where I can get them to say, I actually really like that. Because most people, if they think they hate beer, they've had, you know, one, you know, Bud Light or one triple IPA or something that turned them off. And they're just like, I hate beer. And it's like, no, that's really pretty narrow to say, I hate this entire family of beverages.
Sure.
You know, so I think wine, once again, it's just that depth that you've got with beer, that depth is really what I get excited about when I'm pairing beer with cheese.
Yeah. And you know, when I've had those same conversations with people and I, you know, I'll tell them that, yeah, if I tasted those beers that turned you off, I'd probably hate beer too. Let me show you how much better it can be. But it's funny how many times you get a cheese plate and there's usually a piece of like apple or pear on there. Well, you can get apple and pear flavored esters from lots of different hops and some yeast. So it's like, skip the fruit. Let's just add some beer with it. And you've got everything you need.
Yep.
Which is wonderful.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And it's just, yeah, that depth of ingredients, that depth of flavor, just, mm-hmm. it's a real winner. And I think if people have an open mind, We've had hundreds of classes over the years, and it's very seldom that somebody will sit through the entire class and just be like, I still hate beer and cheese. And it's like, you know, it's maybe one in 100. Because usually you've turned them on, hopefully, to a new style of cheese or a new style of beer or a new combination of the two that, you know, one and one equals four, you know, when you put the two together, where they're like, I didn't like either component, but together I think it's amazing, you know? Yeah. And that's what we're always striving for, is that magic of the perfect pairing where the two become a greater third.
Yeah, I call that the zing, boom, pow effect.
Yeah.
It just, you know, by itself, they're not bad, but together, it's a whole new world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very legitimate experience.
Yeah, we find that a lot with, like, Imperial Stouts and Triple Crems.
Mm.
That's one that, you know, a lot of times they'll have someone in the classroom be like, I just really don't like beer. And I'm like, well, okay, try this combination. And, you know, the stout alone, they would take a sip of it and be like, definitely not. But the two together, they put that triple cream in their mouth and they let that coat their palate. And then they add the stout and suddenly it's chocolate cake batter. And, you know, who doesn't want to eat chocolate cake batter? It's just that the very sexy experience of your mouth is coated and, you know, it's become this third flavor that is so much different than the other two that it's kind of like, wow. And you get that almost all the time when you serve that at the end of the course.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's just fantastic. Well, you know, for the sake of time, I'm going to go ahead and start my wind down question process. But if there's anything you want to add, we'll give you a chance to add it at the end, if that's okay. Sound good?
Sure. Yeah.
So I now pronounce you king of the beer world for the day, and by extension, the cheese world, because, you know, I have this magical, mystical power through radio. But you are now the king of the beer and cheese world for a day. What are you going to change?
Whew. Boy, oh boy. Just open-mindedness, you know, that would be all I would ask for. And I think in this day and age, that would be a good lesson across the board, actually. You know, there's no one right and wrong. There's different rights and wrongs. So just keep an open mind, come to the table with an open mind and an open palate, and, you know, let your tongue guide you.
Well, you are a very benevolent king. I've had other people say, well, we're going to do this and we're going to do that and we're going to mandatory education.
No, I like to believe that there's still hope for humankind, you know, so go people.
Right on. Okay, so this one, I'm anxious to see how you answer this one. If you had the opportunity to choose your very last beer or cider or wine in your very last meal or cheese, before you depart this earth, what would you put together?
Oh, geez. I've actually had this conversation in my head before, and it's such a kind of morbid one. Cause I'm always like, what would my last intentional beer be? And at that point, am I being executed? You know, why do I know I'm dying? But I think it would probably be, most cheesemongers love wash drying cheeses, so those stinky, footy, bacon fatty, stewed onion, you know, they're very umami rich. I'd probably do some wash drying cheese with a nice malty beer. And it's funny, because if you were to just say, what's your last beer going to be, it would never be a malty beer. But with that cheese, I would say, you know, maybe like a Rochefort 6 and a nice wash drying cheese. Like, I don't know if you know this cheese, Oma, that's produced in northern Vermont.
I've had it, really, yes.
Yeah, from Von Trapp family. That might be something like that, you know, that's just, it's a known quantity of, it's going to be very, very satisfying, you know. And you're not going to eat it quickly. You're going to linger over it and really enjoy it. Yeah, I think that would probably be something like what I would end up choosing.
Wow. And so the Oma from the Von Trapp family, do I remember correctly that is the actual family from the the real story that became The Sound of Music?
You were correct, yes.
That's right. I have had that. We've used that in a pairing, and it's been a while since I've tasted. I'm going to have to come visit you, but that's the other thing I love is all of these beers and all of these cheeses have a very... sometimes a story is less compelling than others, but every one of them has an interesting story. And this, and this one in particular has an insanely interesting story.
Yeah, I mean, as does Rochefort 6. You know, you think about the history of that monastery and those beers. You know, it's like that's. I think nobody's in this industry to get rich, or only maybe a handful of us are. We're all in it for the stories. We're all in it for the lifestyle. You know, it's like. We all want to emulate our idols. You know, we want to be the people who do good and do right by products and, you know, do right by the earth and do right by the farm. So I think that's why we all do what we do, because it's the pure love of the idea of the thing.
Yes, we are the traveling folk musicians of the beer world.
Yep.
So we've talked about a lot of things, and you've tasted and experienced lots of things. But if you had to sum it all up into one answer for this question, I'm curious to see what it would be. But everything you've experienced, why does good beer matter? And by extension, why does good cheese matter too? That would be a similar question.
I think it's really easy, actually. I think it's because there's such a shareable thing. You know, it's. I opened a beer out of my cellar 6 months ago, late at night. I was like, I wanted one more beer, and I was like, oh, I'll try this. It's pretty old. It might not even be any good. And I opened it. It was like 11 o'clock at night. My family was away from home, and I started drinking this beer, and it was amazing. And I was alone with this beer, and I was so sad because I didn't have anyone to share it with. And I thought of, like, texting friends. I'm like, do you happen to be awake? You know, because I really wanted to share that beer. And so it was, like, really eye-opening to me, like, how much we all love sharing these kind of products. You know, an amazing beer out of your cellar is twice as good if you're sharing it with friends. You know, when we're at these cheese events, we have this thing we call pocket cheese, where all the different mongers end up going and rolling around, and they're buying cheese from different vendors. And then you end up sitting at a table to have lunch beside somebody, and everyone pulls out their pocket cheese, and everyone's trying, you know, they want to share what they've found. It's that act of sharing that I think, you know, that's really what makes this whole thing special. Sharing beer, sharing cheese, sharing something you found. You know, it's what makes it all, you know, great and fun.
Mm-hmm. I had a similar experience recently. I interviewed a gentleman who has the brewery called Bean Curd Turtle. He's actually a gypsy brewer, another podcast for Good Beer Matters. That's already released. Please go check it out. But you can't just go find his beer in the store. He's home brews in his own time, but he's actually a gypsy brewer and has traveled internationally to help other breweries do stuff. But he actually sent me a couple of his beers. One of them was a collaboration he did with Phantom Brewery in Belgium, mm-hmm. just a delicious farmhouse beer. And it was a 750 mil bottle that I decided, okay, I'm going to open up. I want to taste this stuff before I talk with him. It was the same situation. My wife and kids were gone. My kids would share it anyway, but I tasted it and it was just pure heaven. So I went back for more because I couldn't stop. It was so good. I drank the whole thing, but I had no one there to talk about it with. That was my biggest thing is I couldn't tell anyone about this. There was no one there to share it with me. There was no one that the best I could do was just stick it on Instagram and just, you know, share with the Instagram land about this beer. Cause it was too much for just, I felt selfish just kind of keeping it to myself.
It was such a great experience. I understand exactly.
Oh gosh. So I'm right there with you and your answer for that question. Thank you. So if there are people out there listening to this and they want to learn more about cheese, want to learn more about the ACS or about you or your cheese bar in Portland and all the stuff that we talked about, where can they go to connect?
Well, ACS has a fairly solid website for sure. Cheese Bar has a pretty rudimentary website, but we would love to have you come in to Cheese Bar, obviously. We're open 7 days a week from 11 to 11, closed on Mondays. Yeah, and there's lots of other great resources. If you really like cheese, one of my favorite things that I get every week is Planet Cheese that Janet Fletcher writes. She's based down in Napa, and she loves beer, too, and quite often writes about beer and cheese together. I'm kind of blindsided by this one. So many good resources. I don't know what else to say. Buy my book.
Yes, definitely. I can definitely vouch for that. I will also add links to this post. In fact, I did, doing some research, I found Janet Fletcher's, is it a blog?
Yeah, Planet Cheese.
But, yep. There's you with some interesting looking cheese glasses. I will stick that in the show notes too. But it's just, I mean, there's so many ways to learn more, or at least as much as you want to learn. It's all right there, and you guys are the perfect stewards of sharing this knowledge.
Yep. And I would just say, you know, go to a great cheesemonger, buy some cheese, and then go to your favorite brewery and share it with your friends. You know, that's the best way to keep on learning.
Perfect. You just answered my next question, which was any final words of wisdom. But do you have anything else you want to share in that thought before we wrap it up?
No, I think that's, support a local cut-to-order cheesemonger if you can. You're going to always have a better experience there. And just go to breweries and talk to the bartenders and talk to the brewers and just enjoy beer and cheese with your friends.
Excellent. And don't be afraid to experiment. That's it.
Absolutely.
I challenge myself to try to pair a beer with pepper jack. I do not like pepper jack. I never have. And I can't explain why, but I grabbed it one day just to say, okay, what can I put with this to make it better? And I found a Scottish beer, particularly a Scottish Wee Heavy, was made that beer very, very palatable for me. So,
nice.
So try things. And even if you think you don't like them, try them again, because things change.
Exactly.
Steve, thank you so much for coming onto this podcast. I absolutely love this conversation. I am looking forward to meeting you in person at the Cheese Bar and continuing this offline, of course, but preferably with a drink in our hand.
I'm with you.
Well, thank you for being on the podcast, and I will talk to you soon.
It's my pleasure. Cheers, Jeremy.
Cheers.
The world of beer has become increasingly aware of flavors and nuance. The same goes for cheese. It is our job to serve as a guide to cultivate better experiences when we pair the two together. Luckily, we have resources like Steve and his book to help us do better when helping others find better. Join us in the next episode where we visit with a professor who schools us on how to make beer culture as inclusive as it should be. Good Beer Matters is a show about great beer, great friends, and the experiences we create together. But it's also about better appreciation of the beer you enjoy. I believe better education leads to better enjoyment. So if you're a beer and food professional or even a beer enthusiast, then please subscribe to Good Beer Matters and visit me at goodbeermatters.net. After that, grab a beer, hang out with friends, and let the world open up. Thank you for listening. Cheers.